Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good morning, everyone. This is Minorities in Tennis Show here at the UR Tennis Network, the show where I have the privilege of chatting with minorities involving this great sport of ours. My name is Alex Chan, and I'll be your host for today. And I'm not busy with the show. I serve as a community tennis representative for USTA Virginia Tennis. I'm responsible for tennis in Northern Virginia, National Junior Tennis and Learning Chapters, schools, military bases, and multicultural organizations in Virginia. I also serve as a staff liaison to our Diversity and Inclusion Committee. For more information about USTA Virginia Tennis, you can check out our website at www.virginiatennis.com. All right, so before I introduce my special guest for today, I would like to take a moment to play some words from our sponsors.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
And welcome back. You are currently listening to the Minorities in Tennis Show on the UR Tennis Network. Listeners are more than welcome to call in to ask the guest questions during this broadcast by calling in at 714-583-6853. Again, that's 714-583-6853. Please stay on the line until I am able to get you live on air later on in this show. Okay, so today I will be chatting with Joseph Awadala, founder and president of the Coptic Tennis Association in Northern Virginia. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Great. So for the listeners that are just tuning in, can you tell them a little bit about yourself?
My name is Alec. Introduce me, Joseph Awadala, the president of the Coptic Tennis Association. Most of our activities is run at Northern Virginia, around Annandale and Vienna. Basically, I'm a big tennis fan and also participant. I play in USTA leagues in four or five level. And I also play tournaments, men's open or men's 30s tournaments as well. So I'm also a coach. I'm an independent coach currently for anyone who seeks a private or group tennis lessons. So basically tennis is my life besides work.
And what do you do for during your day job?
Well, my day job, I'm actually a network engineer.
Okay.
So that's my peak, you know, hour times from 8 to 5 or so. And then basically I either go home, lunch, and watch my kid. And then just if I got a match or a coach or something, maybe I leave later. So it's kind of, my day is kind of split between family, work, and tennis, and then of course other activities on the weekend.
Like sleep?
Yeah, that's a big thing.
So did you grow up in Northern Virginia?
Not really. Actually, I came to Northern Virginia. I was age 19, actually close to 20, when I came to Northern Virginia. I lived before then. I grew up in Egypt, Cairo, Egypt. So basically half of, so far, two-thirds of my life was spent in Egypt, and the third right here when, you know, came close to 20. Still in my teenagers, I came.
So what brought you to Northern Virginia from Egypt?
Well, all my family came as a family immigration, basically for school. That's the biggest thing. I came for school to finish my degree and also seek working and living in the U.S.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, well, I guess, how did tennis get started for you? Did you start in Egypt then?
Definitely.
Yeah?
It's back in Egypt, actually, my dad was a big tennis player too. He used to play in a local country club over there, and he used to take me when I was young and play with the Bull Boys. I mean, the term of Bull Boys doesn't exist here, but Bull Boys actually in overseas is a big, it's actually an occupation for boys who actually start Bull Boys, and they probably down the road they turn to coach, you know, learn all the secrets or all the skills from the coaches that they Bull Boy for. So I was playing with the Bull Boys a lot, and when I grew or got a little stronger, I started looking for juniors or people I can hit with. And, you know, since then, it's just been my passion. But I started, like, on tennis, like, took it really seriously a little bit later, my age, around 13 or 14, my early teen years. I was playing basketball. I started actually with ping pong. I was a big ping pong player. I played competitive ping pong.
I
played basketball, and I played some soccer. But ping pong and basketball was mainly my two sports that I played at early age, beside tennis, but I was just kind of casual playing tennis. But one day I just picked up my racket again and played with my dad and some Bull Boys at early teens, and that was it. That's what I like. That's what I want. And since then, nonstop.
I see. Yeah, so I guess you used to play a lot of ping pong and basketball, soccer. Did you find that did any of those sport activities help you in tennis?
Very. Actually, ping pong, I even recommend my juniors, like, if you have a bad eye-hand ball coordination that you don't know when to hit the ball with the pad or a racket, ping pong can be the best game that gives you that skill. Besides, your eye gets, you can see the ball faster, you're actually be a lot faster. And I think part of my attacking game that I'm currently playing, I'm known like, oh, my timing, I hit the ball so early, so quick that I can attack pretty quick at my volleys. I think I picked it up from ping pong because, you know, the ball, the speed of the ping pong and the table, I don't know if you've ever seen competitive ping pong matches. Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, those guys can see the ball so quick in milliseconds, like the time that the ball leaves your paddle and the comeback is much faster than, of course, a big tennis court. So you learn how to see the ball quick and react faster.
Gotcha. So what you're saying that if you play ping pong, you can be like Agassi. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. You just need to get the physical part added to
it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Ping-pong. You need to have the footwork, fitness, your strength. But in case of the arm-hand ball coordination, I don't think any ping-pong player out there, if you put him on the tennis court for the first time, he will just pick up that skill and how to hit even a topspin in just 1 hour. And you just, like, you think you've been playing 4 years. Just because the way you hit the ball at ping pong, it's actually very similar. Of course, you don't use your shoulder, but you have that feel and how that you hit the ball up and the timing.
Right, right. And that's interesting. Yeah, I used to play a lot of ping pong in college. I had this one guy who was a really avid ping pong player. And so I took him to a court, and I guess for him, the first thing he did was, I mean, he'll have topspin, definitely. But I think he hit too much topspin. It was too risky. So he'll get all these balls into the net all the time, at least initially. Yeah, but no, definitely. Ping pong is good for tennis in that regard. And I guess the basketball and soccer, I guess, to help with your fitness then.
I know a few players who play, or footwork, like who play soccer or basketball. They're much faster and they get to the ball much quicker and recover because, of course, soccer needs a lot of leg strength and a lot of speed and in coordination and when to run and stop that movement. Basketball, same thing, run and stop. So I would say soccer, if we do cross training, soccer can help you a lot with your footwork and basketball. Just stay healthy, try not to get injured, because soccer, it's like these days, like football, you can get injured anytime.
Definitely.
Out of nowhere. So that's the only downside of soccer. Just, you're more likable to get injured than more likely to get injured than any other sport.
Right. So in Egypt, I guess I'm not really familiar with the sport culture in Egypt. Was tennis a popular sport then, or was just like some other sport but like more popular in Egypt?
Tennis is just popular among the big clubs and probably on the upper class. Even middle class don't play tennis. So
okay.
It's probably the same around the world in a third world country. Countries like tennis is always an upper class, kind of rich, you know, sport. Think about tennis overseas is like golf over here. Of course, golf has started to be more relevant. Maybe the middle class started to get on golf, but definitely tennis is an upper class. So you think about golfing is more like tennis. Although there's a lot of people play golf too, but tennis is always an upper class kind of sport. Even though I'm not coming upper class, but my dad always tried to get me in there. And that because he loved it, and he shared his passion with me for the sport.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. All right. So maybe we'll touch upon that topic a little more later in the call. But just to keep it going. So you started tennis when you were young with your dad, and did you play? I guess I'm not sure. Did you play in high school, college, as you were growing up as well?
No, the school didn't have any tennis programs.
Oh, okay.
Of course. I mean, they don't have any kind of tennis league or anything, but I played some in college, but college was very intense because I did 2 years in college and then I came over here. But in college, it was just, there was competition like once a year, once a semester for all the college participants, kind of like intramural, but the winners of intramural, they go and compete other, colleges as well, but there wasn't like kind of defined like a team practice or so that we have, or a club practice, a college club team, but mainly I was just practicing on my own until I came over here.
Oh, wow. That's very different.
So it's small individual efforts. I mean, it takes a lot to, you know, stay up with the sport and compete and play. It's not just easy, oh, you just got a team and that's it. Of course, the club, there were players over there, and they're, you know, part of a team, but unfortunately, my family didn't want me to join any team because of my school and my education. This is not something that I would agree, but they had that for us, though. We need to spend most of the time in studying. We're going to talk later why I started the Coptic tennis. But I was still playing on the weekends. I was still taking using any every opportunity. I remember I used to wake up 6:30 in the morning, go play before my college classes. And the club where I was raised or over there is pretty much the number one, number two club in entire Cairo. And there was a lot of international good players out there. I come and watch, very competitive. Think about Division I players that would play over there, and used to watch them. I still, until that day, have some friends that used to play over there. So it was very dynamic. It was very exciting, but unfortunately, I didn't have the opportunity to practice full time like they did.
Right, right. Okay, yeah, that's very different. All right, and just to remind viewers again that if you would like to call in and talk to Joe or me, number is 714-583-6853. Again, that's 714-583-6853. And Joe, it looks like we do have one caller in. Put him on live soon. All right, so caller, this is 2874, last four digits. You're on air right now. Who am I speaking to?
Hello, good morning. This is Gustavo.
Gustavo
from
no way
from ATLA, the American Tennis Latino Association. So,
well,
first of all, I just wanted to check in. I'm on my way to do some lunch, but I just was listening on the phone. It's a very interesting conversation, and I had a question for Joseph here or Joe as he goes. So, is he you are a first generation here like me, so. Can you tell me if the tennis has helped you kind of meet new, people here? For me, it's been, most of my friends that I made have been actually through tennis, networking through tennis, and it has helped me as a person is not born in this country to meet a wide variety of, different people. So has that helped you in that matter, or could you just tell us how your experience is with tennis and networking and meeting people? Thank you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is the biggest, I would say, advantage besides playing the sport. I got to know you, Gustavo, so that was great.
But, I know.
So it's very exciting. To meet new people that I don't know, and having a very healthy competition environment on a court rather than just meet up and outside like in a restaurant or just shows or movies, and it's a small community. I feel like tennis community is just really small. Like you play somebody one time, you know, see him like maybe in another few other weeks, other place, and then you start the chat and all that. So it's a great networking opportunities, or getting to know new people in a healthy environment. So this is something that I really enjoy, and I feel blessed to, be able to play competitive and getting to and having close friends or people I know. I can give it, like for my Facebook, half of my Facebook friends is actually I knew through tennis. So this is something I'm actually thankful and I'm proud of. So. I totally agree, Gustavo. It's just one of the things that you get besides playing the sport and stay healthy and enjoying it, but also knowing new people and having actually started a good friendship or relations with other folks.
All right. Thanks for the answer. And Alex, thanks for putting this together. And I guess I'm gonna listen on the site now. But thanks for your answer, and I'll keep listening. Thank you, guys.
Yeah,
and I'm looking for a matchup, Gustavo. I'm gonna play again. Man, I promise, I'll be in better shape. A rematch.
A rematch.
Yeah, he played great last time, by the way, Alex. Man, he's getting really dangerous now.
Oh, yeah.
All right, talk to you guys later. Bye.
All right, talk to you later. Bye. Okay. So yeah, again, if anyone else would like to call in, number is 714-583-6853. And all right, back to Joe. So now you are in the U.S. You're at the U.S. So you kind of talked a little bit right now just about how tennis helps you get in touch with the community or make friends. So I guess how did it actually start off when you came to America? Did you immediately start looking for tennis friend tennis players, or how did that work?
Yeah, believe it or not, I actually, when we came, I started, I think we stayed like, well, I remember the worst 3 weeks of my life. This is just the first weeks when I came in, because there was no tennis courts, there was nothing, and you didn't know anybody, so it kind of like the feel of loneliness, and then, of course, new place, new people, nobody I know, so that was the worst, and just 3 weeks, but I kind of like was striving to find somebody to play, and then we moved. I remember to Alexandria, remember those apartment buildings, I don't know if you know them, the Southern Towers, right off Seminary. And they actually, that was my first tennis. I was really excited because I saw tennis courts and pools and people play, and this is when I started to meet new friends. I start to play again.
Oh, great. And then, okay, so from that point, I guess, did you eventually get into a USTA League right away, or did you come later?
Yes, I did, I think, on the second or third year I was in the U.S. I started to play some tournaments where people were referring me, hey, why don't you play that tournament? This is how you play, and this is how you register and all that. But I think, yeah, about the second or third, I can't really remember when was my first official USD game. But I joined as a volunteer at the Skyline. I was a volunteer assisting coach, and the head pro over there still at Skyline, and I owe her a lot. Probably, if I mention her name, I don't know if you probably know her, Carol DeCampo.
Yep.
And
yep.
She's the one who got me under her wings, and she was trying to help me, and she's an awesome woman. So I owe her a lot for that. So it was since then I was, you know, started a volunteer assistant, then I got opportunity to go back to Annandale. Coaching Annandale, and since then I think I coached Annandale between 10 to 11 years, and right now I just became independent.
So you were in Annandale after that. I know you worked at Annandale Sport and Health, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And then now you say you're an independent coach. How would someone be able to reach you if they wanted to get coaching from you?
Well, I basically go through referrals and just more some advertisements, but mainly I go through referrals because I establish enough reputation and knowledge through my community and also throughout, my Catholic community and also the tennis community. So I mainly do through referrals because, you know, I only coach outdoors right now, which the hours are a little limited in the winter, and also the weather conditions, and besides, you know, this my full-time working. So I normally have few long-term, I should say, students that they have been with me for over, I should say, 3 or 4 years, and some college players that went for college and then come back and they need some help with their game. So as I said, it's just basically through referrals.
I see. Okay. I guess you kind of mentioned, you talked a little bit about earlier about the Coptic Tennis Association, which is a community tennis association in Virginia. So I guess in the beginning, some people might not even know, what is Coptic? What does that mean?
Coptic, it actually, its origin actually started back in history from the pharaohs. They say descendant of the pharaohs. Back in Egypt, so it goes way back. But the term Coptic is actually goes to Copt, and Copt is actually the origin of the Greek word of Egypt. So Copt means actually Egyptian. This is the original comes from the so Egypt was descendant word from the Copt as the origin Greek words, but Copt or Egypt is actually very close the way the origin of that word. So that the Copt, but the Coptic now is actually referred to the minority Christians in Egypt, the Orthodox minority, Christian Orthodox minority in Egypt. So that's where the term comes from. So the Coptic tenets, or the Coptic is basically a minority. It's not a small minority. It's not a huge minority. We're about like between 15 to 20% of the population in Egypt, but they're still, until this day, they're being called Coptics, Coptic, or because of the origin of the Coptic Orthodox as well. So the Orthodox actually go by side because we're Eastern Orthodox Church, like the Greek Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox, all the Eastern Church go follow the Orthodox calendar, even the Orthodox creed.
Okay. And then when did you exactly start the Coptic Tennis Association?
I should say back in 04 or 05, actually back in 04. So it was about like 5 years. I mean, it's actually been close now to 9 years.
yeah.
But the idea came when Chris Train, he used to run the Vietnamese American tennis community. He had a CTE member for the Vietnamese, and yeah, I used to work for him at Annandale, and he asked me if I have a community or something I want to start, and it was a great idea. I was like, yeah, I would like to, you know, get my community more involved in the game, juniors, adults, and share the passion and see how important it is in either a child or adult life. So he helped me out to get all the paperwork started with the USDA and also through the state to start a 501c3 nonprofit. Basically, you know, walked me through how to do it. And then I approached, you know, the pastor for the church that time. Like, hey, I want to start something for the kids and community that can help the kids, like, you know, stay active and all that. So it was... Yeah, I should say back in 04.
Okay. Oh, so, all right. So I guess what is the Coptic Tennis Association's main mission, I guess, or vision as a group?
Well, our two main missions is, first, stay active. So show them their ways to stay active and what tennis can help you to stay active playing the sport and the importance of being active. So that's one thing that we always stress about for adults, or because especially around the Coptic community or maybe other communities, you know, families tend to just, you know, hang out at the home or just do more home activities rather than outdoors and sports-wise. It's only a small percentage that all the families that try to actively seek in getting their kids active outside, like in all them programs. So we try to help them, hey, we can do that. It doesn't have to be expensive, and we can help you even with the transportation if there's a central location to drop your kid. So that was one thing we wanted to make sure we do. The mission is actually, I added a second mission, or this, the second one that we chose is education or tutoring, because I've seen a big need in that with the kids, especially a second generation kids that they came, you know, their families immigrate from Egypt, and parents are not, they don't understand the culture, they don't think they need to help their kids to excel in school that often, rather than just rely on the teacher at school or their older sibling, if they have any, and they should be good. And there was that wrong idea, or maybe perception, like, oh, it's easier to go through school here than overseas, which absolutely wrong. Here, you got to work hard to make sure you get where you want to be. Nothing is easy. So, and that was the things we try to help them in. And give them awareness. So basically staying active and also provide some tutoring became our mission.
Got it. Okay. So with that mission, how does a current program that you run with these kids work? How would that process look?
Well, we've been doing over the years, it was basically a weekly meeting. It's a community meeting. The adults have their own meeting, and then I'm responsible of their activities for the kids. So when the weather is warm enough, just to take them outside, I take them to the courts in Vienna. So do once a week about an hour session, get them a group to play and rally and enjoy and have fun. On the tennis court, of course, I bring all my tennis equipment with the rackets and all that, but and they just use it, lend it, and then just bring it back. So this is one of the things that we've been doing over right now. We've been consistently doing over a few years, 3 years or so.
Okay.
And I added the tutoring part, which and the private instruction. So lately I had some funding to send out some private coaches and tutors to the families, to their home, and they can actually coach their kids, give them extra coaching and also tutoring, so it'd be like a two-hour session.
And do they pay for this this program?
I'm sorry?
Do the parents, the family, or kids, do they pay for the service that you provide?
Paid? Not really. It's basically, for now, it's kind of like free. Service, more community service for that.
Okay.
Because we rely on grants. Because we don't run like a camp, it's mainly more like a meeting when they meet and then we just take them, the kids, out to play or even the tutors. I just ask them to pay for gas. So it's kind of paid because we don't charge them high, but we kind of like take care of, I should say, 85% of the cost. They only contribute like 15%.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's a really good service then. So, I mean, do the families actively then seek this service out then? Do you have like a waiting list for this program?
Well, they started. Now they saw value and see how great is the service and how much difference it makes, and they kept calling me and telling me, and they also give me the feedback. And I make sure that service, because it's almost for free, it's only for families that cannot afford to send them to like a full-time camp. So it's more middle to low income kind of level. So the families really enjoy it. I mean, they love it, and they ask me what's happening, and I always follow up with them. But I would not families that afford is definitely – they need to almost pay 100%, just, you know, if they wanted to. But normally they get their kids outside in the regular full-time camps or private clubs, which I encourage, like, yeah, if you can afford it, just please. I even provide referrals because the community tennis that I started basically for the other families that cannot afford or cannot have the time or even the transportation to send their kids. So it's not just always just the money, it's just the time and the commute and all of that. But and they thank me, they appreciate that.
I bet. I mean, it's a tremendous service. And I know you mentioned that you have to do some grants to help support some of this service. I want to speak from my USTA side. Just a reminder, there is actually a Mid-Atlantic grant. It's coming up. The due date is March 31st. So if you want to apply again this year, I know you won last year, I can help you out with that too. So maybe that's something to think about. I will let you know more about that. But okay. So I guess the way you're talking about, like, there seems to be a lot of, it seems to be actually a good sized Coptic community in the area. Like, do you know how that came about? How did this area had a strong population of Coptics?
Oh, yes, we do. The way they track the Coptic community through the churches or the active members that they go, but we have, I mean, the biggest church in this area is St. Mark's, right off by the Grove of Fairfax. But we have close to 1,200 families that go there. This is the ones on paper and record. So that's huge. We got all other three or four other smaller churches that they go. So this is just the community, the Coptic community that go to the Coptic church. There's other higher population, other ways. The Egyptians for general, it's not just Coptic. Like, you know, as I said, the Coptic term is just referred to the, you know, minority Christians in Egypt, but there's also a high number of Egyptians that here for work, or they've been here for a while, and I know a lot of them too. So we have quite a, I should say, if I'm making a good guess, we probably have close to maybe 150,000 families in this area.
Wow, that is really significant. And then, like, do you know the reason why this particular area is popular?
Well, normally the big cities, you know, and the big cities have the more job opportunities, openings. I mean, we have a bigger population, higher population in New York. It's probably almost triple or four times higher than what we have here. But the big cities that attracts most of the jobs. And normally, I should say, Egyptians, Coptic, it's kind of like also, you know, when other communities, let's say, I'm just going to throw an example here, like maybe the Vietnamese community, their education, their cities, or people care about education more than anything. And normally, Egyptians things that, you know, seek the high, white-collar jobs, and they want their kids to be lawyers or doctors or engineers or even, you know, a judge. So they always seek to be, you know, we want to be at the top of their income ladder or something, and they make sure their kids excel in school, all that. So we're our, like, seek excellence, and, of course, this area got a lot of, you know, opportunities for those kind of jobs. And that's probably, you can see a lot of Egyptians in this area for that. So that's what they normally go for.
I see. Okay. Because you, I'm not sure there are other, I'm sure there is actually, there like other Egyptian or Coptic groups. Do you ever collaborate with them with your programming?
As far as other groups?
Yeah.
Collaborate? Well, the groups, it's mainly on also on a small scale as far as other sports or activities, I mean, with the church. So the group I'm already collaborating, which is the adult meeting in Vienna, and then I'm just responsible for the kids when they have their meeting. And that's what the group I'm collaborating with, because they need a formal activities or student kids activity for the kids. And basically I, you know, I took care of it. It grew, and basically I'm responsible for that meeting. So it's kind of like collaboration. But as far as other sports, no, it's kind of like those programs kind of independent. You just choose what you want to do. But I don't think hasn't been something organized, like in a weekly activity for the kids, except let's just meeting up and hang out as more a social activity rather than a sports activity rather than this one right now. I think this is more of a unique kind of thing that we do as far as organized either sports or even social activity that we do. Sometimes we take a break, go out, or do something art, or even I have a mobile gym in a bag that I come and show them how to work out at home and stay in shape in the house if you don't have opportunity to get out, like when it's cold and all that.
Okay,
so
got it. I guess another question I have about the Capitan Association. Besides you, who else actually helps you out with doing the mission of your organization?
Well, I got close to about, we're like now we're growing. Actually, got close to three or four volunteers that they're helping, and also two part-time coaches that I used to send in the summer, but they're both in colleges right now. And it's kind of cold, so I'm waiting when they come back or seeking others. So we're mainly volunteers, but we got also part-time coaches, especially looking for a senior high school, freshman college students who are looking for maybe, you know, summer job or even seasonal jobs that looking to, of course, you know, make sure, you know, I have a good background or I know them in person before I send them, because they're dealing with kids, so. that's something
and,
that we have. So, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and these volunteers and coaches, are they also Egyptian background, or are they just people
mostly
in the area?
The coaches, actually, two of them, the part-time, they don't have any Egyptian backgrounds. The volunteers are mainly Egyptian backgrounds, but the part-time coaches don't have Egyptian backgrounds at all. So,
okay, Okay. So I guess another question I had with the program. So I know you go to these families, you go to the meetings and play some tennis. I guess do you have any other upcoming events that you do, one day events that you have planned for them?
We used to do that, but we haven't done it recently. We haven't recently done it because we're already meeting on once a week. But I'm trying to arrange something to be on church-wide event, not just for our group or the one that participated in our meeting. So I'm going to try to do health, a sports day event, so I can include tennis in there. The reason that if you just say tennis, probably you're just going to get half of the people congregation, or maybe not even half, a small portion, because a lot of them don't play. It's like, oh, I don't play tennis, I don't want to come, But when you say a sports day, so you can break it, okay, we can have a basketball, we can have some tennis, we can have cooking. Of course, the food bar needs to be there. It's really important, We all, Egyptians love food, and I'm sure other communities love it too. So you got to have the food bar, you got to have the sports bar, so people will see something they want to play, and then maybe after they're done with sports, their basketball game, they come over, see on the court, oh, there's a bidding class, I think I can do that, so they can get in and play and all that. So you just have to have a different sports event in one day, so people can find something they can connect or can play or do, rather than just say tennis.
No, that's a good idea, just to grab a lot of people in. It's also good to know for kids to play different sports, including tennis as well. So
right.
Be just
always cross-training is always a great idea. Even sometimes I do that, so kids don't just say, oh, why I want to play tennis every day? I want to play soccer. It's like, well, let's take a vote. Who wants to play that sport today? And we do it. And since we have enough volunteers, we can break ourselves in a small team and then just keep rotating. And if you want to come play some games, done. But normally I try to make it as fun as possible game that they always ask for tennis. So it's a blast.
Okay. How you do that. Okay, great. All right, and then let me ask you a hypothetical question, and I'll see how you answer this. So let's just say that you were suddenly awarded a $100,000 grant to spend on your program. What would you do with that?
Oh, boy. man, I never thought about that, but I would tell you, I'm going to actually use it to the max use for the kids. Like, I know I can extend the programs way bigger than what is right now, and of course I'm going to help a lot more families and provide more service, as I talked about, the private tutors or coaches, send private lessons, and also establish a league, travel maybe for games. There's a lot of things I can do with that, and of course always the funding is the problem. Because the support, so we have more people can work as well beside volunteers. So it's something that is going to be very exciting if we have this amount, because I know there's a lot of things we can do funding.
We'll probably say,
need more, please. So.
And I think that's a good follow-up, actually, to my next question, is the obstacles that you run into while running this organization. Because you mentioned some of the things that you would want to do, like help support traveling, the funding, the people support. So what are your major obstacles when you're running the Coptic Tennis Association?
The two main things, really, I think it applies for every single program that's out there, community, and maybe there's something we can see if USD can step in and help out with that. Facilities, always a problem. It doesn't have to be a tennis facility, but just an indoor facility, like we can, the quick start program for 10 and under, or even do a cross training for sports and facilities during the winter. So facilities is always the biggest obstacle. second largest. Well, transportation, but maybe hasn't been big an obstacle because it's more centralized where we pick up. We got some volunteers to use their cars to pick up the kids and drop them. Some parents help. So transportation is still an obstacle, but it's not the major. It's not the huge one. If you get a facility that close where they live around the area where we serve, then that's probably the biggest one. And the time, mm-hmm. of course, get the facility at the time we're meeting. So it's always another obstacle. It's okay. Is there open time around that? So mm-hmm. this is something that we always have constant challenge. And second obstacle, of course, getting the right staff or people that can work and know the value and, of course, being responsible and talented to, you know, keep the kids engaged and love it and want to come back and do it. So this is the second obstacle, finding the right folks to be able to assist or work in that kind of scenario. But I try to make it and make sure they're worth it. Like going, if someone wants to look for a job, try to convince, hey, you don't have to work 5 or 6 hours at, you know, a store selling clothes. If you can get paid the same, but you just need to do some driving, coaching in just 2 hours instead of 5 hours. Mm-hmm. So I try to make it worth it for them to do it. So, and that's why the funding comes. That, of course, I mean, third obstacle, of course, where we you can have A or B, which is transportation and facility, without funding. So you get funding, you can do both. And, of course, the assistance. So I should say funding, facilities, transportation can be taken care of, and, of course, the staff to help you. So.
Okay. Those are the key points, definitely. And maybe I suggest, I'm not sure if you've done it before, you may look for some sponsorship maybe for your program. Maybe that could help with some self-sustaining of any of your programs. Maybe that might help. Have you ever looked into sponsorships from companies?
I really didn't try. I just spoke to some individuals, but I was considering more family sponsorship rather than sponsorship for a program. So, like, yeah, do you want to be a responsive family, their costs or how they send the camp and all that. So instead of doing a group, or, of course, if I get a group sponsorship or for our community sponsorship, that will be great. But it seems like it's much harder to get sponsorship from a community, from a company, rather than just from friends or families that I know. They can just do a family, like one family sponsor another one. And, of course, I know a few more people within the tennis community, outside the tennis community, if they're willing to do that, then they can help out and, of course, show them progress. So, and normally people are likely to respond with that because we tell them, hey, your sponsorship, they know where their money's going. You know, rather
yeah.
than just,
yeah.
You know, deposit in just one chunk of spending. It's like, you don't know, okay, what happened? How are you spending? Of course, we still give them reports and everything, but people can relate to how they do it, and they're even more generous to spend more because they see the results and they see where they, you know, their funding and finances going. So I feel like family sponsorships or kid sponsorship can even work better than just doing a CTA sponsorship because they think they just put their money in a black hole and you never hear what's happening, what happens,
right.
with, you know?
Okay, got it. So I guess, yeah, okay, good. I'll remember that. So when later on we work on our grants together, you should definitely mention that family sponsorship as a way to help self-sustain the program, and they would like that on the grant. So, oh, good. Joe, guess what? It's almost actually went past the time that I thought we would go to. But let me ask, you know, I guess I really enjoyed our conversation. I definitely learned a lot from what you said, and it's good to hear your background. You definitely are doing a great work in the community. Do you have any final thoughts before we end today's show?
No, I just want to thank you, Alex, for hosting me in your radio show, and just wanted to ask all the parents and their out there that they have kids or kids staying at home and they're complaining their kids are, or maybe they have personality problems, they're not good with their friends, or they don't have enough friends, or even they feel like they're not socially connected enough. So this is, I would just recommend or always suggest just taking them out, get them play, have them join the team sports or even individual sports like tennis. And don't think tennis is just for the high upper class here. This is not how it works in this area, even anywhere in the U.S. here. So tennis has become more popular, more available, more feasible. It's not as expensive as you think. And you can have a group settings, and you can even have individual settings, private coaching, and it will make a huge difference in the kid's life. And, of course, one thing, because I coached high school as well, of course I didn't mention that, it's a great way to connect through a team sport, either in school or even in clubs or a community. And this is how you actually make long-term friends. If you play somebody on a 2 hours game, 2.5 or 3 hours, you can remember that match for a long time, and you can remember that person for a long time. Not necessarily a bad thing, even if he beat you, but you can establish a relation. Hey, how are you doing? And then probably down the road became a close friend, as you'd be able to hit with him or her on a regular basis and become one of your closest friends. So this is a great opportunity. If you have a chance, please help your kids out.
Oh, okay. Good words from a good man. All right, so if they wanted to contact you, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, as I said, through referrals, or I can leave my number if you want to call me, or I even got my email, so you can always reach out to me. And, of course, I have a Facebook group that I can share anybody wants to be a member of, they can reach me. So we can use all the social medias that are out there as well. And, of course, I have a phone, I have an email. So any information they try to seek me to feel free if you want to contact me.
Okay. Yeah, I guess if any listeners would like to contact Joe, they can also contact me. I'll refer them to you, Joe. And my email is alex@virginiatennis.com. All my information is on the website. All right, so great, Joe. It was a pleasure talking to you, and hope you have a good day. And, hope you continue doing what you're doing in this community.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Again, I really enjoyed that conversation today.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right, so that concludes our show for today. Thanks to everyone that tuned in. My next show will be coming up in 3 weeks on Saturday, March 23rd at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. My guest will be Heidi Venable, an at-school tennis instructor at Frederick Douglass Elementary School in Leesburg, Virginia. To stay connected to all of the UR Tennis Network radio shows, be sure to subscribe to our channel at blogtalkradio.com/UR Tennis Network. And also, you can like our fan page at facebook.com/UR Tennis. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in into the Minorities in Tennis show. Have a good weekend, and I will see you here again in a few weeks. Bye.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.